It's Wednesday, June 15th. She wanted to be a teacher, not a good guy with a gun. We start here. Teachers in Ohio can now bring a gun to school with 24 hours of training.
It's a nightmare, and I'm not going to lie, I've had nightmares about it.
Teachers' unions aren't happy about it, neither are some police officials. We'll ask why. Parks have closed for wildfires, while now Yellowstone is closed for floods.
Oh my God, there's that big rock.
We'll take you to a region under stress and now underwater. And they convinced millions they were late to the cryptocurrency game, but were investors the ones getting played?
They looked at the dot-com bubble and they said, huh, this has a similarity to it. There's a lot of familiarity here.
Amid a dramatic downturn, an emerging industry is facing questions. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. There is still not a written-out compromise gun bill in the U.S. Senate. Not yet. What we have is a framework, and 20 senators, 10 Democrats, 10 Republicans, who have said, yeah, in principle, this looks good. And this framework got an important vote of confidence yesterday from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
For myself, I'm comfortable with the framework, and if the legislation ends up reflecting what the framework indicates, I'll be supportive.
He's not promising to vote yes, but this is the closest he's gotten so far. He sounds positive, and with his vote would likely come several others. Remember, though, this agreement only hits on basic issues. Support for red flag laws in states that want them, stricter background checks, checks for domestic abusers, and an 18-year-old with a violent past. But these are not universal background checks. This language certainly doesn't outlaw AR-15s or put new age restrictions in place. Which means, around the country, even if this passes, there will still be people armed with assault-style rifles. There will still be 18 and 19-year-old teenagers armed to the teeth legally. And so if you're a school in the wake of Uvalde, Texas, the question is, what else can we do to protect our students?
We have had requests from schools to allow this to be done.
Well, earlier this week, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine signed a new bill that will make it easier for teachers to carry a gun in the classroom. The Republican governors actually tried this once before, but state courts sided with parents who said teachers should at least get specialized training, the same basic training as police officers, more than 700 hours of instruction. Well, this new law does require training, 24 hours of it. After that 24 hours, as long as the school district is on board, a teacher can have a loaded gun in their Ohio classroom.
It was not we pulled out of a hat kind of thing. We actually did a lot of research into what schools were doing already in Ohio before the Supreme Court decision, and that's why we came up with the provisions we put in the bill today.
But there are several groups who are not on board with this, including some police organizations and teachers themselves. Let's start the day by hearing from one of them. Tracy Arway works in the Columbus City School System in Columbus, Ohio, where she is a special education coordinator. That means she works in several classrooms with special needs students around the district. And Tracy, let me just ask you, what was your reaction to this new law?
Disgust, anger. I guess I am having a hard time connecting the dots of how arming untrained people are going to keep people safe. And that's what we would be, untrained, because let's face it, 24 hours is not a lot of time to learn anything proficiently.
Yeah, are you a gun owner yourself, by the way?
I am not. I have three small children in my house.
Right.
I've had gun violence in my family, and so I just choose to keep my household gun-free.
And so you wouldn't be one of these people that, like, you would not be somebody bringing a gun with you then if you had the opportunity?
I would leave the profession if I was told I had to carry.
If you told you had to carry. Now, what would it feel like to know that a teacher next door could have one, or a teacher down the hallway could have one? What does that mean to you?
It's scary. And I have three school-age children, one at each academic level, high school, middle school, and elementary. And I'm really fearful to know that someone with as little training as House Bill 99 says would be at risk of harming someone accidentally in a situation. We are not law enforcement. We are not military. And to have a gun or have a teacher next door or one of my children's teachers with a gun is it's a nightmare. And I'm not going to lie, I've had nightmares about it. Just the thought of that.
Really? You've had nightmares just thinking about more guns in the classroom?
I have.
Do you know other teachers, by the way, like gun-owning teachers who are like, yeah, like I want to protect these students. I'm bringing mine.
No, I know quite the opposite. People who are gun owners, concealed carry, go shooting at the range, hunting, and said they will absolutely never take their gun into a school.
Can I ask you just about what and we can come back to the bill in a second, but just about kind of the state of play for teachers right now. Like, do you envision, at this point, do you have to envision as a teacher what a mass shooting or what a shooting scenario would look like in school? Like, do you have to actually, have you had that like play-by-play in your head, I guess?
Yeah, I don't go into a building without thinking of my exit plan. Mm. I am not in the same building every day. I'm not with the same teacher every day. And people laugh at me because I make sure I tell at least three different people that I'm in their building and where I'll be in the building. I want to make sure that if something happens, someone knows I'm there too, because I'm not there every day. And I want them to know to look for me.
What do you mean to look for you?
Like my body, if I were to get shot.
Wow.
I mean, like, I truly worry because I'm not in the same building every day. If there is a active shooter situation, I will be forgotten.
Wow.
The nature of the students that I teach or that I help the teachers with, they are not quiet. Mm. We still lock down and hide and stay quiet. And that's just not something that is in the ability level of my students. If you think of individuals with sensory issues, with autism, with cognitive delays, they don't understand what's going on in a normal routine, and they thrive on a normal routine. So if you're disrupting that routine, you are not going to have a class that can sit quietly out of view of windows and doors, and doors that have windows.
Wow.
It's just not something that they are wired to be able to do at no fault of their own. We're first. You know what I mean? Like,
we're first is how it feels.
We're first. If someone's looking for something and it's quiet everywhere, it's not going to be quiet in my room. and they're going to know where people are.
Wow. Right. And then with what happened in Uvalde, Texas, and with what you're seeing from the legislature here, does this make you rethink your role as a teacher? Does it make you question your profession?
Yeah, it doesn't make me question the profession. It makes me question why we're putting teachers in more roles than what we went to school for. 90% of my colleagues have advanced degrees. We master's degrees. I almost have my doctorate. You know, we all go to school to be the best educator we can. I understand that we have to take on some social issues, but to take on law enforcement on top of it is a lot. And I think that we have a lot of people leaving the profession because of things like this. You know, not to be cliche and what like the buzz lines are, but we can't pick up books for our children in the library or be trusted to teach curriculum, but now we could be trusted to have a handgun or worse, a weapon. And, you know, and I know that that's like what, you know, that,
like, it feels like you're second guessed in everything except the choice of gun.
I went to school to know how to pick out a curriculum and deliver curriculum and pick out books that are appropriate for children for their age and developmentalness. That's what I went to school for. I'm a professional and an expert in that. I am not a professional or an expert in when to use a gun, how to use a gun, how to determine which student is actually the threat. What if I shoot the wrong one? Right. My student's watching me with a gun. The trauma that will bring. It's, I think, something that is forgotten.
But then it makes me wonder, how do you protect kids, right? Because like you said, it's not our job to be police. But then what do? Do you bring police into classrooms? A lot of them have been driven out of schools because you don't want to over-police campuses. Like, are locks on the door enough? What steps do you think should be taken to alleviate the risks out here?
I think it's systemic. I think it is community-driven. I think all of the changes need to be looked at. The school is a part of the equation, but they are not the solution in the equation. There are a lot of components that go into safe schools, safe communities, resources to help that mental health component before the individual thinks to get a gun. You know, they're not arming doctors now. So why are they in their shootings in hospitals? I mean,
right.
We just saw that in Oklahoma. So why are we resorting to arming teachers. We need to put money, resources, and effort into being proactive and not reactive.
All right. That is Tracy Arway, Special Education Coordinator in Columbus, Ohio. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
Next time on Start Here, if you thought a buffalo was the scariest thing you could encounter in the great outdoors, think again. We're back in a bit. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Those steel pylons, the bridge pylons, they're laying on the bank.
You go to a place like Yellowstone National Park for adventures, but they're not supposed to be like this.
Oh my God, there's that big rock again.
In the last few days, Yellowstone has had to close down because of massive flooding that has wiped out everything in its path, and that flooding has not been limited just to the park either. ABC's Will Carr is on scene right now. Where are you, by the way, Will?
Morning, Brad. We're in Livingston, Montana right now. That's about 50 miles from Gardner, which is the northern point of Yellowstone Park. Gardner, up until late yesterday, was completely shut down, wrapped around by these floodwaters. They were able to open up the road, Highway 89 there, to let hundreds of tourists who were trapped in Gardner escape. But it is tough going right now in and around Yellowstone because of all of this flooding.
Yeah, and can you just put these pictures into words, like, just to give us a sense of how powerful these floods are, because they're bizarre to watch.
Totally. So let me just set this up for you. Last week, they had pretty hot temperatures here. And so the snow melt, because you pretty much have snow year-round in this part of Montana, the snow melt started to come down from the mountains. Couple that with some record-setting rain. That is what led to this catastrophic flooding.
We got about 4 feet in our basement, and there's about 2 feet covering the entire street in front of our house.
Holy. We've seen bridges washed away. We've seen homes washed down into the Yellowstone River. Cars flooded, businesses flooded, people trapped, trying to get to safety.
Tell me what the last 24 hours have been like.
We got in town Sunday night, and just the water start running.
We spoke to one family who was from Tennessee. They were coming through. They planned to just spend one night in Gardner, and they got there right when the floodwaters are going up. They got surrounded by the waters.
It was just going really fast, and the water was just taking logs down the river.
They rode it out in Gardner until they opened up the road so that they could leave. And when we were talking to them, they were some of the first people out.
My grandparents were saying it's the highest it's been in about 100 years.
The rain has stopped, but there are still areas that are swamped here. And as the water starts to recede, that's when you're going to really see the extent of the long-term damage.
Is there a sense of when you, I mean, reopening, I guess, is its own question, but just when you can, like, get this under control?
So authorities are hoping to reopen Yellowstone as soon as possible. The caveat to that is the north side of the park, especially Highway 89, which is the main road that snakes through the north side of the park, that sustained major significant damage. So it's going to be quite some time before that part of the park reopens. The rest are hoping to get open soon, but they have to let all that water recede. Go in, check for damage, check about the impact to the water system, to the sewage system, before they can definitively say, yes, we can let people come back in. The secondary issue here is you have a lot of towns that it's their lifeline that to have this park. And so if it's going to be shut down for any amount of time, that's going to be a major economic impact on all the families that live in this area.
Yeah, and I think worth highlighting, Will, what you said at the beginning, that this was all prompted by hotter temperatures than usual. So with climate change, you know, we've seen parks shutting down because they're huge tinder boxes at some point of the summer. Others now, like Yellowstone, completely flooded because of higher temperatures. Will Carr, there in Montana. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
As inflation makes the U.S. dollar weaker and weaker, these are the moments you'd expect crypto investors to be wagging their fingers, right? Like, I told you so. Bitcoin and Ethereum were built to be a digital currency out of lockstep from the Federal Reserve. But yesterday, yet another crypto venture was hit with staggering losses.
Coinbase, the largest crypto exchange in the US, announced Tuesday it would lay off 18% of its workforce. That's roughly 1,100 jobs.
And it's enough to make you wonder, is this the moment the whole cryptocurrency market comes crashing down? ABC's chief business and economics correspondent Rebecca Jarvis is here. Rebecca, how bad is it getting for people who invested significant money in some of these cryptocurrency portfolios?
Well, Brad, it really depends on when they invested significant money. If you invested at the height of the Bitcoin, Ethereum, crypto frenzy, and NFTs, and all of these various products that relate to crypto, if you started this year pouring money in, well, you're down significantly. You've lost about half of your investment, especially if you put it into Bitcoin. But if you started investing in Bitcoin 5 years ago, you're up about 750%. So it's really a question of timing. But I think what underlies what's happening in crypto is very similar to some of the trends that you're seeing in tech, in the NASDAQ, in all of these big tech names that have also fallen dramatically this year. And that is that we're in the midst of a gigantic change.
The Federal Reserve is expected to raise key interest rates by a half point Wednesday in an effort to cool spending enough to curb inflation without tipping the economy into a recession.
The Federal Reserve has had 0% interest rates pumping money into the economy for a decade. And we're turning the page on that because really we have to in the face of historically high inflation. But there are costs to that, of course. The cost of hiking interest rates is that borrowing gets more expensive. It means there's less money sloshing around looking for investments in things like crypto and tech. And so we really are turning the page in a very different kind of way.
And I should say, like, I don't own crypto. I've never owned crypto. And yet it's still so fascinating to me because it's felt like you said, Rebecca, in the last 1 or 2 years, these businesses have exploded. Like, every celebrity and their mom is sponsored by a new cryptocurrency or a trading platform, or they're hawking NFTs. But if it goes belly up, like, these spokespeople have already made their money. It's a bunch of regular people who maybe invested who are out of their savings. Is that part of the issue here, that there are so many different ways to invest and they all seem to be having their own crisis moment?
Well, there's sort of this old adage on Wall Street that if it's on the cover of Newsweek, that's probably the peak of whatever it is. And so a lot of people looked at the Super Bowl and the number of crypto ads.
I'm not an expert and I don't need to be. With FTX, I have everything I need to buy, sell, and trade crypto safely.
And the big namings of sports stadiums with various crypto companies on them.
Right.
They looked at the dot-com bubble and they said, huh, there's a lot of familiarity here. Now, it's easier said in hindsight because things were soaring into that moment, but it does feel like some of, well, not some, but a lot of the excitement around crypto has come out. A lot of the wind around crypto has come out of those sales.
Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong warned a recession could be imminent, and with it, a so-called crypto winter.
Now, anybody who's listening to this who's a crypto evangelist will fight me on that and tell me that this is their buying opportunity. But you raised a really important point at the outset, which is this is supposed to be the decentralized means of investing such that when the Fed and other central banks do what the crypto community considers wild and outlandish things and borrows a lot of money, that crypto is supposed to be able to be the antidote to that, the hedge.
What we have to focus on is what are the positive benefits of this technology that we know is here to stay and is going to disrupt the way we do things.
But here we are in an environment where the Federal Reserve has done a huge amount of that, where we are sitting on gigantic piles of debt, the U.S. government, and worldwide, that's the case. Central banks have been doing this now, and it's not working out for crypto.
And so last question, is this a momentary lapse? Or is, like you said, the crypto evangelists will say, this is a whole new thing of money. Like, websites didn't go away after the dot-com bubble burst. Like, we just saw different websites later. Or is this the moment, like, even if you're, like, sitting on, like, a few Bitcoins, you should just sell it now because eventually everything's going to go to zero.
Is this buy the dip, Brad? look, Brad, I'm not an analyst. I am a student of history. And historically, we have seen many different crazes surrounding lots of different assets. The big question that crypto still needs to answer is, what is that fundamental value other than the supply and demand to own the crypto in and of itself? What is the fundamental value? Where can I spend my Bitcoin tomorrow and know that what I'm spending for a cup of coffee in the morning is basically what I'm spending for a cup of coffee in the afternoon? And it was risky before to put money into these types of assets, and that risk is only rising in the type of environment that we're in.
Yeah, and if the value of your stock goes down a very little, you still own a piece of a company. If the value of your gold goes down a little, you still own a piece of gold. If the value of your Bitcoin or your cryptocurrency goes down, you don't have anything. You got some zeros and ones. Rebecca Jarvis, really interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Okay, we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, she's not happy anymore because this is the legal defeat she'll never forget. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. There are lots of laws in place to protect a person from being illegally detained. Like, if I ran up to you and threw you in a cage today, the punishments get stricter and stricter for every hour I detain you. But what if you're not a person? The Non-Human Rights Project argued there is an unlawful imprisonment happening in New York City, in the Bronx Zoo specifically, of Happy the Elephant. Now, she's lived there for 45 years. She was brought to the U.S. in the early 70s as a baby. But this animal rights group filed a claim of habeas corpus, the legal statute that says if you're detained, you have to be brought before a judge and jury. Happy's never seen either.
Happy deserves her freedom because she has autonomy. She's extraordinarily cognitively complex.
This has become a more and more common type of lawsuit called a personhood case, filing a lawsuit on behalf of something you think should have some form of rights. But yesterday, the New York State Supreme Court said no, Happy is not a person. She's an elephant. And while Happy deserves compassion, she does not deserve habeas corpus.
The next thing you know is I will be filing a suit saying that, well, veganism has got to be legally imposed because It's a denial of the personhood of the animals that we're eating.
Part of the issue was this case could have extended far beyond one elephant. The chief judge openly fretted that under the plaintiff's logic, we might have to stop using farm animals. After all, that would be forced labor. Pet ownership could suddenly be thrown into question. This decision means that Happy will stay at the Bronx Zoo instead of being moved to a much larger sanctuary. But animal rights activists did note that out of 7 judges, 2 of them dissented. Meaning, as cases like this proliferate in other states, this is becoming a more accepted legal argument and less of a legal circus. By the way, Happy is not the only elephant to the Bronx Zoo. She apparently lives with another female named Patty. Apparently, though, Patty was not as good of a witness. Like, Happy passed this personhood test where she apparently recognized herself in the mirror, so she gets the lawsuit. Start here tomorrow. If you got a smart speaker at home, by the way, always remember you can set us up there, get your news fixed while you're brewing your coffee or slicing your bananas. I don't know what you do in the morning. That's your business. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.